Well, hello and welcome to what is a special episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. It's rather exciting, isn't it? With me, Al Coates, and him,
Scott Cassin-Rennie. And
excellent.
Our special guest host for this evening, my friend and yours, all the way from up north.
Up north.
Elaine Amy.
Hello.
I'm saying Elaine Amy like people know who Elaine Amy is, but that is your public persona, isn't it?
That is my public persona.
Yeah. And we, at long last, we've managed to get you on the podcast.
I know. I've avoided it for a very long time.
For all the obvious reasons, but that's fine.
Obvious reasons, which you'll realise probably in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, slow to start, but once you get going, Yeah. But more importantly tonight, I mean, I guess the real reason we've got, well, there's a real reason we've, well, maybe explain that why we got Elaine on. As we go along, it'll become apparent, actually. But we've got author Dr. Amber Elliott, who has written a fantastic book, Super Parenting, Boost Your Therapeutic Parenting Through 10 Transformative Steps. So hello, Amber.
Hi. Hello, everyone.
Welcome.
Thank you very
Great
much.
To have you.
Feels like I'm joining a party. Sounds fabulous.
Okay, I'll have a little glass. I'll have a little sip of my wine for that.
Yeah,
you drink
my
your water,
water
and your tea.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've connected a few times with you on Twitter. So we kind of, you're a voice in that community. So we've heard you, you know, you kind of have a professional input. So could you, but then you've written a book, so we thought we'd get you on. But could you explain sort of who you are, what you do, and why you've written a book?
Sure. So, who I am? Oh, there's a big question, big philosophical question there.
Yeah.
So, I'm a consultant clinical psychologist. I run the Child Psychology Service, which is a social enterprise, not-for-profit, which, amongst other things, offers adoption support. Give you as much detail as you need, Al. But in summary, that's me. I wrote a big book, as you said, recently. Came out on the 21st of July. And, yeah, happy to talk
it's
about
fantastic.
Any of those things. Oh, thank you.
I think I've already been fairly vocal about that, haven't I?
I want to know a bit more, but what brought you into this line of work? Because working, you sort of hinted at it was a community project, so that's, means as a charity that
so it's a community interest company. So what that means is it's sort of midway between a charity and a business. So unlike a charity, we don't get any grant funding. We have to earn all our money, but we sign up. I signed us up to be a not-for-profit organisation because for me, I could do a whole hour on this stuff, but there's a lot of suspicion out there of people that set up businesses to provide therapy and healthcare, quite rightly. And I wanted the ethos of the company to be writ large. This is a passion for what I do, for what the team do. It's not nothing to do with money. That's how I set up the Child Psychology
thing. But that's good to know because it puts in context you writing a book because, you know, writing a book is no mean feat in any circumstances. It's maybe a cheeky question, but I did forewarn you. Why on earth write another book about therapeutic parenting when there's, you know, my bookshelf's full of them?
It's a blooming good
what
question.
Made you think?
It took me 8 years, and I've asked myself the same question too. I think, I don't know, this will be for other people to decide, really, once they've had a look at the book. The reason I wrote the first book, and that extends into the second book, is that I looked around and saw lots of wonderful, very clever people writing very clever books. That sounds like I'm being having a dig at calling people clever, and I'm not. They are
just lean
wonderful
into it.
Books.
Lean
I'll,
into
all
it.
Right, I'll lean in it. There's wonderful books. What I felt there wasn't enough of was what I was able to do, what clinicians like me were able to do in a room with families, and that's talk to people in a way that's accessible, that's practical, that's usable, and I didn't see enough of that. And so that's why I wanted to write the first one. And my emphasis, I mean, lots of different things I can tell you about, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of them. But my emphasis that I hope is coming across in both the books, but particularly the second one, is about not just delivering ideas to parents, to therapeutic parents, I'm doing air quotes, as, you know, here's what you need to do, go and do that. I hope that my book, my dearest desire is that this book, that my previous book, that everything I do is about feeling part of a relationship. And I wanted to write a book where I could talk to people. That's really hard to do in a book. So, you know, when I left the NHS local authority services, you know, a very hard decision to make. But that was because I wanted to be able to deliver direct services. But I did that 2 years before the ASF started. You know, that was, there was no guarantee of anything being able to be done, knowing that people wouldn't be able to afford to kind of buy a psychologist. So I wanted to do that, do some of that work if I could, if local authorities could fund me to do it, which some of them did. I wanted to write the book so that people could have that bit of me in a different way. And I set up a resource website as well. And yeah, it was all just about, I suppose, in a nutshell, what I felt like I couldn't see enough of was, yeah, practical, usable information. But I got, frankly, pretty fed up with being in a service, in a CAM service, in the most specialist service that families can go to with problems with, you know, their relationships and their parenting, their children, and going to people that didn't get it. You know, fight through all of those barriers through professional after professional. That's not to say those professionals aren't wonderful at what they do, but there wasn't good enough specialist information or not enough of it being accessible to families. And so I grandiosely set off on a mission to try and provide a bit of that in different ways, face-to-face, in a book, in a resource website, because it just wasn't, and still isn't, okay. Excellent. Enough.
And I think that's part of the issue, isn't it? Because if you can even access that service, if you can get through the front door, if they've got enough people to be able to do all that depend on your priorities. And, you know, my experience would be exactly that from my first kind of experience of CAMS was that inexperience of knowing what they've dealt with. So, you know, we're talking a few years ago now, but, you know, I think a lot of people will relate to that depending on where they live. I'm very grateful now to live in the Republic of Ireland where CAMS exists in the same way it exists in England, but we have an amazing service here to the point when we were looking at a new house, we had to stay within the town limits to keep on accessing that service. So, but it is very hit and miss. So Elaine, you've read the book.
I've read some of the book. The book arrived on Sunday evening. Wednesday evening.
Like, press.
And I haven't been on a speed reading course.
I was going to say, we'd been informed that you were like doing it special for this, but you know, whatever.
I mean, I have read, I've read the introduction, which actually, there is an awful lot of work that has gone in just into the introduction. And, you know, I'm really impressed with the amount of research and knowledge that has sets the scene even before you're into the 10 transformative steps, which I've then just flicked through and read little sections of.
Yeah. To be honest, Elaine, sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, and Scott, but that's the way the book should be used. They're not reference material, you know, they're not textbooks. You don't sit down for one day. I don't imagine there is one parent on the planet, whether dealing with trauma or not, who can sit down and read a book cover to cover.
No.
And as we talked about, Elaine, you can't, when you most need something out of a book, hard to access it. So it's very much meant for dipping in and out of. So
I do think this book is worth reading from cover to cover. I know that, you know, in your how to use this book section, you've said that's not what your intention was. But I do think the layout of the book, that I think, you know, you can dip in and out, and then when you feel that you have some space and time, I think it's worth starting from the beginning. go through the introduction, because there's a lot of underpinning knowledge there that explains, that you draw on in your other sections as well. You know, like, you know, I haven't come across a therapeutic parenting book before that talks about system one and system two thinking. You know, and if you read the introduction and you grasp that, that will make sense that you refer to it in every single, you know, step throughout the book. So I think it is worth reading from cover to cover. And I think it's accessible, really, to be able to do that as well with the style that you've written it in. Putting aside the fact that none of us have lots of time.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, Elaine, in terms of what you've read so far, do you think it's good for simpletons like Al and I?
I think
will
it
we
is.
Understand it?
I think
written by one, so it must be.
It's clearly not written by somebody Scott. Who is a simpleton. It's obvious that there is, you know, you're obviously very intelligent, and that, you know, there's a lot of theory that's gone into pulling together even just the introduction, you know, talking about behaviorism and, you know, how we've now come to understand the brain, system one or system two thinking. That isn't stuff that a lot of people will already have much understanding of. And I don't think you need to. I think you can read the book and you can just read that. Or as with me, I've already Googled a few things. I wasn't too sure about that. So then I've gone off and read other bits that I find really useful to understand. So I think it is, but I think that practitioners also need to buy this book and read this book. Because I think, you know, when you are really not in a great place, you know, this book is good for everybody and, you know, you get lots from it. But when you're really not in a good place, I think this is a particularly useful book. And I think at those times, a lot of us really would benefit from a practitioner having read it and, you know, drawing on some of what's in the book and then, you know, bringing that to us in a very empathic, you know, they can do the thinking and the reading and just share what we need from it. When we maybe can't access all of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think as well, do you think, I know you've not read it all, but do you think in terms of prospective adopters as well, you know, they're probably the ones with a little bit of time on their hands before they go into this. So,
I
you know,
mean,
it might
be
a nice idea.
But I mean, I wasn't one of those prospective, I was reading lots of books, but I was in a complete flap.
Yeah, but that's
I was
what
already
I was...
terrified, because you're going through an assessment, aren't you, at that point, you know, which is, equally can be quite threatening. But I would say prospective adopters, foster carers, special guardians, and parents, just parents anyway, you know, it's a good book for parents. Not all of it will be relevant, but there's enough in there that you can kind of think about how am I reacting to when my kids start hitting each other because, you know, they don't want to watch the same program on television. That there's stuff in there that's useful for that, you know, everyday parenting.
That's interesting because I mean, as a parent, as a would be, as a prospective parent, reading scared me because there were so many books out there that just used big words that I didn't understand. Now, you know, you're training. I'll say that with my fingers in the air, training to be a parent when you're going through your assessment and stuff. Mm-hmm. The last thing I needed was to sit down and read a book that I didn't understand. So you know, that's really why I'm asking about prospective adopters because not all of us are readers, you know. I like to read books, but it's like proper.
Pictures in
like,
this one, Scott.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Pop-ups. I like the pop-up
can I ask
bit,
Amber
and the scratch
question?
And sniff.
The question I have for you, Amber, and I think Elaine's sort of pulled it out really distinctly, is that I think the thing that I noticed differently, because I've read, like everyone, I've read lots of books, and there's the sort of manualized models of therapeutic parenting, which is if child does A, you do B. And if child does C, you do D. But you seem to have, there's a focus on parents much more than I've read in therapeutic parenting books before. And why is that? And why, I think that's what makes it quite distinctively different to my reading. So
good. I'm glad that comes across because that's the point. Because oh God, we've all been there, haven't we, of trying to do the right things. I'm using air quotes again. I'm doing that a lot today on a podcast. That's really helpful, isn't it? Trying to do the right things, knowing what the rules are. And that's, you know, we get that a lot in behavioural type ideas. You know, in my world, people talk about social learning theory and behaviourism, but the, you know, the consequences, the praise, the behaviour shaping stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and they are, and there's an appeal in those because they're practical things you can do. But what that all misses out, and the slightly more manualized therapeutic parenting, and I'm a huge pragmatist, whatever works, you know, if this makes your family life more connected, more happy, more, you know, just calms yeah. things down for 5 minutes.
Gets you through the days.
If it gets you through 5 minutes, then, you know, you're not going to get an argument from me. But the point is that, you know, we're asking parents to be therapeutic. How can a parent be therapeutic unless they're unless we take into account what's going on in their worlds, their minds, yeah. their bodies? You know, that parents are almost like the lens through which the therapeutic parenting has to happen. So why would you bypass that? It's such an important process. And I think, you know, just as a little personal insight, I won't go too much into it, but this isn't a hypothetical project for me. So I grew up with trauma, you know, trauma in my past. And I also know what it's like to live with somebody who's had a traumatized past. And in my case, that was my mum. So I've got this kind of two-handed kind of view of the world, whereas of seeing what children need and what I wish I'd had, but also seeing what I wish my mum had had in order for me to have a better experience. And I suppose I'm doing a bit of therapeutic work on this myself to work some of this out. But, you know, if I want to, you know, live my life having done only one thing, it's to support parents to be more of what their children need from them. And in trauma, you know, that's so hard. That's such a hard job. And there's so much, you know, I'm also a parent, not of, of traumatized children, but, you know, I know the tremendous guilt and shame and self-judgment and, oh, just beating myself up every day that I do as a parent. And I haven't got to deal with trauma. I've got to deal with sort of processing mine and how that comes through, but not that of my children. And I just think it's too hard a job to do without somebody that wants to look at how it is for you as well.
Because you're really frank in some of it. It's wrong to compare to other parenting models, but it just seems really refreshing. And I think that probably all three of us have been on training where often we've come out feeling crap. We feel like I could never do that. Or we come out feeling like, yeah, we're going to do this. And then within about 30 seconds, our children have unraveled it. So like even one of your chapters is, you know, parental self-acceptance, which we're all on a journey with that one, by jingo. But just even like flagging that up, going, hang on, just chill the hell out, everyone. You know, you've got needs too, and they're legitimate, which is a different message because we're told to, we have to be these superhuman.
But isn't that bizarre parents? When we're, the general message is, use a model that's empathic, that's about connection, that's not about shaping behaviour via consequences. And yet the model we use with parents is one of self-discipline, of, do the thing that will, you know, will get the job done that you're told to do, because that's what needs doing, rather than having an empathic process through which to work that. You know, it's bizarre to apply one model at the level of children and then, you know, revert to our old school model when we're relating to parents. For me, I could go on and on. Sorry, Elaine. I could go on and on in terms of thinking about that systemically and what we try to do. You know, our biggest aim at TCPS is to do that empathic therapeutic stuff with everyone we encounter. That's not to say we manage it all the time, just like parents don't. But, you know, it's a bigger issue than just applying it to children. Sorry, Elaine.
No, it's fine. I was just going to say, one of the things I really like about the approach that you've taken with the book is that you don't deviate away from, you know, the fact that we as adults, you know, it's our responsibility. I mean, I have a trauma history. I'm fairly open about that. I don't tend to talk about the details, but it is fairly significant. And as a parent, you know, I know that I still have a responsibility to meet the needs of my children, whatever's going on for me. What I really like about the approach that you've taken is you know, this is what we should do. This is what it should look like. And I know you don't use the word should, but it's in there, you know, that there's a parental responsibility to take the lead. However, it's okay. The times where, you know, you don't manage that, you pick up and you carry on, you know, you're human. And that's what I really like. Because sometimes certainly in adoption circles, you can find yourself in one of two camps. And, you know, one is where we all sort of judge each other according to how DDP pace we are. And the other is that we all secretly say, oh, no, we all lose our rag, we all lose the plot, and it's fine. And actually, you know, we do want our children to heal. We do want our children to develop, you know. And I'm certainly uneasy with both extremes. Do you know what I mean? You know, I want to be stretched. I want to be stretched. And, you know, I want to sometimes be reminded that what I'm doing is a really important job, and it's going to make a difference, not just for now, but, you know, for the rest of their lives, for their children's lives, etc. But I also don't want to be shamed. Do you know what I mean? And I think you struck the balance really well in the book. And, you know, like when I did the tweets and I said, you know, I clap at the end. It's not often that I want to say thank you. And, you know, that it really struck me that I wanted to say thank you for writing it. You know, there's a lot of good books out there, but it's very rare that I want to actually, you know, say I really appreciate that you put the however many years was it, Amber?
Well, it took eight, but I had a few other things going on in the meantime.
Yeah, but you know, it's lovely, actually. The whole feel of the book is lovely. And, you know, there's an acceptance of parents and there's an acceptance of children. And it's the only starting point that we can have, really.
Wonderful. I'm so pleased to hear you say it. And, you know, there's a bit in there that I think you tweeted about, a really simple idea, but just thinking about the balance of needs, that we can't continually prioritise, you know, nuances, tricky. Right, we're all we know each other via social media, we know nuance is tricky, but understanding that it's not about prioritizing one person, it's not about prioritizing a parent's needs or a child's needs. It might be at one particular time, but overall it's about prioritizing the relationship. And to build a relationship, both people have got to be okay enough. You know, you've got to get enough from this, you know, this relationship for it to feel sustainable.
And whether you like it or not, you've got to start from where you are. You know, I can't start from a place of not having experienced significant trauma. You know, whatever book I read, I'm not going to be starting from that point, and I can't. I can only bring myself into connection with my children in the best and safest way possible. And sometimes that means saying to my children, this thing that happened was a trigger for me. I'm going to own that. And I really appreciate just allowing me a bit of time to process that. And I'll be right back with you. You know, I love you. I care about you. And I live that way, you know. I certainly don't live with having got it right all the time, you know. We are who we are. And I think, you know, whether we've experienced trauma or not, a lot of people who are parenting children that weren't born to them, if nothing else, have experienced a process of loss, you know, and things not going the way that they wanted them to go, and having their own children, etc. So, you know, we all bring a story, and our children, the things our children do, and the relationship with our children can trigger all of that.
Absolutely. And that's true if there's not trauma involved. So, you know, you layer all that on top as well. And it needs to be kind of real in thinking about how we relate to each other.
I did think there was something that was interesting in your introduction where you said, I can't remember the exact wording, but I think you mentioned DDP, you know, your book sort of fits well with DDP, and then you said to a certain extent NVR, and I kind of wondered about the to a certain extent, because for me, I think honestly, I think it fits really well with NVR.
What do I say? So I think I'm just not as I'm a DDP practitioner, I'm a DDP consultant, seem to be a DDP trainer. I've kind of lived in that groove for a long time. So it comes from that. But I suppose maybe I've worded it slightly wrongly, but I suppose there are some things in there that DDP isn't clear enough about, as far as I'm concerned, about the nuts and bolts of when it doesn't feel good enough, when there is things that are just not okay, when I need to act now, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do to keep people safe?
Yeah.
And NVR has a lot more of that.
I think they
I'm not an expert on NVR. I'm trained in NVR, but I'm not, you know, I've not practiced it for years and years. But I think there's just bits to be drawn on from.
I think your book is really fits really well. If somebody, you know, out there is sold on NVR, and they are very likely to really like your book. You know, I know there are strategies and principles in NVR that obviously, you know, you're not going to cover those in your books. That's not what your book's about. But I don't think there's anything really that clashes with nonviolent resistance. It feels like you know, that there's an understanding that sometimes there are things we have to deal with, you know, and it can be a bit uncomfortable when we want to be therapeutic, but something's happening safety wise that are going to make our children feel a little bit uncomfortable, or maybe, you know, guilty, or I'm avoiding going into a conversation about shame because I think my definition might be different to other people's.
I'm going to butt in.
I was just going to say, I think, you know,
we're going to keep talking, aren't you, Malia?
Well, I just want to make a cup of tea.
I think that your book acknowledges that sometimes we need to do something, and, you know, you talk about the system one and system two thinking, which is basically, you know, not the automatic what we do in the moment, but a more reflective, deliberate. It's really quite consistent, but like you say, it's language, isn't it?
And let's be honest, there's nothing new out there. You know, it's a, you know, you get a psychotherapist on here, a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, and they would say a lot of this is pre-existed, any names of DDP or NVR, or you know, but we're all just trying to language it in a way that makes sense to us, that feels useful to people. And
my question at this point is, we have been given very kindly by the publishers, because let's be honest, Scott and I got a free book out of it. Elaine bought hers. Well done, Elaine. Keeping Amber in the manner she's accustomed to.
A few pence for Amber there.
Yeah. The hell with it, throwing it a coal on the fire. We've got a book to give away, so we need a question from you, and we're going to hide it, and then we're going to bury it deep in this podcast, so the people have to work for it. You have to earn it.
Yeah. Don't just give it away. Come on.
No. So, Amber, a question that we can, that people have to answer. And if we'll let people DM us the answer to the podcast Twitter feed, and then we'll pick out a winner from a hat. So, come on, give us a question that you want.
Just any question.
Any
question. The scope of the whole planet I can ask a question about.
A bit broad, isn't it?
Anything.
Do you want something relating to the book, or what sort of question do you want?
Well, it doesn't matter, because you could have already given the answer, but it just means,
okay.
How about how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, that's a very fine question, Elle. Let's go with that.
Right. And so we'll speak of the question no more, so they have to listen to at least 30 minutes of it.
Yeah, but can I just say, not just Twitter feed, any of the socials, and they can also email andfpodcast@gmail.com, because I think it's unfair just to put it out to the Twitterati. You know, other people listen as well, you know.
So is this meant to be guesswork, or is Amber meant to give the answer?
No, we've had the answer like three times already, so
have
I'm
we?
Sure that everybody... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone wasn't paying attention, were they?
Yeah, I wasn't. Well, it's because we talked about it before we started recording, so I know how long it is, but I thought that was pressing that button.
You're going to get so many tweets now going, I've listened to the whole thing, she's not saying it once.
Yeah.
I was supposed to get through.
No, I know it definitely was said because even Elaine said it once as well. So, you know.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Pressure.
Okay. I can't wait now to find that that is not in here.
Definitely is. It definitely is.
Okay.
Anyway. Just to help, the spider's got that many legs. Can I ask a sort of a broader question about therapeutic parenting? Because I think there's no agreed definition of what therapeutic parenting is. Is that helpful? Because I don't know about you guys, but I meet people who say, oh, I'm a therapeutic parent. And you kind of go, well, what does that even mean? Do you think, you know, is that helpful or not helpful? Because, you know, different people kind of talk about it in different ways.
Do you know, I always, sorry, Amber, I was no, just going to say, I always refer to myself as a reflective parent rather than a therapeutic parent, because I think if I was to define myself as a therapeutic parent, I would be getting it way wrong sometimes. And also, I think, why are you screwing your face up like that? But I'm just saying that I've not done any therapeutic parenting training, so how can I refer to myself as a therapeutic parent? Whereas what I learn is picked from, you were just talking there about some stuff from DDP, some stuff from NVR, some stuff from this, that, and the next thing. And that's how I have gone down the parenting route. So, you know, it's reflective.
It's I mean, there's something about then, intentional as well, isn't there? Reflective, yeah, exactly. And intentional, yeah. With a purpose in mind that is, you know, recognizing the impact of loss and trauma in every interaction and being intentional about, you know, not causing further harm, helping recovery.
There's something inherent in the, and I agree, there's a thousand different definitions, and I suppose unless you're going to get some big accredited organisation that claims it and says we own this, you know, it's, you know, if you can call shopping retail therapy, then you can call, you know, some kind of parenting where you're trying to understand your child's therapeutic. But there's something, I think there's an acknowledgement in therapeutic parenting that, and hopefully, you know, that comes out, that's where the title of super parenting came from. It's kind of this message that parenting people with trauma, or, you know, dealing with, you know, looking after people who have had traumatic experiences, pulls you to different places. I was going to say it requires different things of you. Does it require it? I don't know, but it's really helpful if you have a different perspective, and it sort of sets up the idea that maybe traditional parenting, I'm doing air quotes yet again, is going to be more of a struggle, whereas therapeutic parenting tells you there is healing to be done through the everyday interactions of being with your child. That's a nice broad, you know, definition, isn't it?
Interestingly, on Twitter, I know I heard a conversation recently that made me feel a bit more careful about using the term therapeutic parenting, because I can't remember who it was sort of saying that implies that there's something wrong, you know, with me as an adopted adult, etc. And I really get that. So I'm careful with the term, because I think I use the term, I just use it carefully. I think it's just, you know, understanding how that might feel for children and young people to kind of feel, I need to be parented therapeutically. Do you know what I mean? There's kind of a flip side that I think some adopted adults have made me think about.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I suppose I've joined the therapeutic party late in therapeutic parenting party late in some ways. You know, we offer lots of therapeutic parenting sort of support through our clinical service. But my emphasis in the beginning, and certainly with both books, but the, you know, even in the title of the first book, was about, you know, a lot of people, you know, taking away the world of trauma and the world of therapeutic parenting, kind of staggered me every time, surprised me every time I saw it, but that parenting meant behaviour management, that there was something about doing parenting that means managing behaviour. And I think we're probably as a group so immersed in, you know, a different kind of parenting world, that might sound alien, but that's what it meant. And for me, it was about, you know, meeting people where they were, thinking about how they were doing their parenting realistically, dealing with really challenging stuff at times, both for themselves, in their families, and not, you know, not just seeing a nail and hitting it with a hammer, you know, being more, having more options, having more tools in the toolbox to address behaviour with. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started with. And you know, that it's very reductive to talk about behaviour, but that is, you know, my work started working with foster carers and under a lot of scrutiny of thinking about, you've got to manage your foster child's behaviour. So starting with where people were and helping people to view that, and air quotes come out again, behaviour, and you know, in a, understanding that in a different way than we're taught to.
Yeah, something about honouring, isn't it? Honouring the experience of the children that we're parenting. You know, for me, it's something about that.
I find it all really problematic, to be honest. I was just thinking, and I thought, you know, I'm not sure I've ever described myself as a therapeutic parent, because I think my idea of parenting is that you do what you have to do. Yeah. Isn't that what parents do? You know, if you have a biological child and they've got specific needs, you meet them and you get skill up. So maybe it's made me think, if I was to put out a Twitter, I'm going to do this, a Twitter question, would you call yourself a therapeutic parent? What would people, intrigued.
Would be an interesting question, to be fair. It would be an interesting question.
I would say yes, I am. But I use the term carefully, and I'm aware that I could be offending people in the process, but I still would say yes, because of honouring my children's history means that I have to constantly take into account, you know, the impact of cortisol on the brain, you know, the impact on the sensory system, you know, nothing is straightforward in my life. Absolutely nothing. Every conversation. If I don't pay attention, and like you said, Scott, about reflective, which, you know, however you want to whatever term you want to use, that is a move away from the automatic response. Whenever I don't do that, I have to make some repair at some point, you know. It doesn't mean I feel bad about myself or ashamed, because I don't. But I do still have to bridge a gap, you know. And sometimes I have to bridge a gap even when I have reflected and thought about it, because still I'm aware that, you know, just because of the experiences and the way that I am perceived, you know, it's a bit of a, either do this and cause a little bit of a discomfort, or do this and cause a different kind of discomfort, you know. And that's a journey that we walk, isn't it, with our children.
Yeah.
And I guess my experience
on that question, I guess I'm coming from a different world from you three in a lot of ways, in that I come from I'm almost trying to correct something that was going on in my world, in the sense of, we would have there are parenting programs out there. There are professionals out there telling people how to do parenting. Very, you know, with fabulous intentions, and it works for a lot of parents. However, it was missing, what it bypassed, it was this kind of black box idea of children's minds, that you use behavioural approaches and you get the right results. And that can work to a certain extent with some children. And for me, therapeutic parenting, reflective parenting, empathic behaviour management, whatever, at its most simplest form, it's prioritising what's going on in a child's mind. And in my work, also prioritising what's going on in the adult's mind too. And I don't think that does happen in typical kind of parenting advice. And I think that's what makes the difference, as what I might call therapeutic parenting, or, you know, just empathic parenting, whatever it might be. That it's about a focus on the inner world, not just the behaviour.
Yeah. I like that. That works for me.
It's gone.
Yeah, I think one of the things I said, I don't know if I said it privately to you, Amber, is, you know, with the book, I was quite surprised that somebody who hasn't parented children with significant trauma wrote that book, you know, because a lot of books that are written by professionals who are coming purely from a, you know, professional angle, really don't grasp the depth of the extra that you need to bring, and the fact that asking it, if you ask a parent to bring all this extra stuff, and you don't do that in a way that's very honouring, it can feel quite insulting, actually, to be expected to bring it as if you just can. And I think, you know, I don't know whether, you know, it's maybe because of your own history that you're kind of, you bring it into it that gives you that empathy.
Yeah, I think as a, you know, as a parentified child, if you like, as a child that to look after my mum in lots of different ways, I was a therapeutic parent.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A failed one at many times, you know, and one that had to understand where the limits of my empathy could lie, and how important, how necessary it was to, you know, how easy it is to drown in somebody else's trauma, and how important it is for children that adults don't do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Al and I have been texting each other while this has been going on, and we've just said that Elaine is like going to be our new book reviewer, because
I don't really like many books.
I'll take that compliment.
I mean, nobody else can see except you lot that I put on there, like, no caution as a note, because I wanted to say, I think I said this to Al earlier, whenever I recommend a book, I always say, but bear in mind, you know, and I
will block my ears if you need to say that, Elaine.
No, it's fine. And, you know, and I think I said to you privately, Amber, you know, recently we started therapy and we were given some books, and I'm not going to say what the books were, but I always find that I want to say, don't worry about this bit, you know, or just be careful with that bit, you know, and sometimes books written by practitioners, I want to say, you know, there is an expectation that you can do this all the time, and you might end up feeling like you're failing because you're not. And there are books by parents, not many, but, you know, there are books where I kind of think, you know, that's a really good book. However, I just maybe be a little bit mindful of this or whatever. And I, with your book, I wouldn't feel the need to say, just be careful, because I think you've scrutinised yourself already, clearly, very well, and you've made allowances for everything that anybody might end up feeling, and you've addressed it and talked about it, you know, and you said to do, you know, don't get into shame, don't get into feeling bad about yourself. So yeah, it's very rare that I would be able to do that. But yeah, I don't want to read lots of books.
Well, it feels like a compassionate book, doesn't it? I mean, next week you're doing 50 Shades of Grey, but
yeah. I mean, I'm only on book two, so we may need to push that back a week.
Right, okay. but I think that I was thinking about this because, like, we've reviewed quite a few books, and sometimes they're quite strongly hung on the personality of the person who's written them, and that's not a criticism of anyone in particular, but I think that sometimes can be an unrealistic expectation, because that's fine. If you can be that, but that then can set some people up to fail, you know, and on our worst days, you know, I remember, I don't know whether you heard of Nancy Thomas, who was this American woman who did the kind of the rounds in the, you know, it was like probably 15 years ago. And I remember being desperate and going to a session where it was put on by a local authority, which was all complicated. Amazingly charismatic. Amazing, you know, examples of, you know, really her, how she did it. But I just cannot be her. We could not be her. We tried and we failed and likely made things worse. Yeah. Right. This is a book that no one's going to pick up and get to the end and go, oh, I'm crap. Yeah. There's no way you can interpret it the wrong way. It's compassionate and empathic.
Talking about Nancy Thomas, and I actually quite ashamedly have the book on my shelf. I can't even remember what it's called, but it's on the shelf. But I think as well, you know, that's the kind of book that I'm talking about.
She might have lawyers, be careful.
Where you say, you know,
she'll come and get
be
you.
Careful, because if you get this wrong, you'll be bordering on abusive. Do you know what I mean? You know, because if you're not Nancy Thomas and you're trying to do some of this stuff and you're not regulated and you don't have a good support yeah. system, et cetera, you know, some of it you can imagine you're going to cause more harm, which is a bit different from just the concern about following a charismatic person. Whereas, you know, you really ain't going to do any harm with this parenting yeah. book. You couldn't, unless you start hitting children with it. In which case you could, I suppose.
I can't. I mean,
it's quite big. It's
behavior.
Quite thick.
No, it's quite thick, yeah. Is there a hardback version for Elaine?
It's quite heavy. Oh, we can't help descending into the dark. The dark side, can't we?
It's like that night again, isn't it? The three of us had a night together where we.
Yeah.
I wrote
I'm
a blog
desperate
about
to
it
hear this story. Come on.
Yeah.
No.
It's probably not something that we can say when we're recording, I don't
think. I think it highlights a really interesting point, is that we're all three people cut from a similar cloth, with children who've cut from similar cloth. And we'd always talked about getting together, and we finally got together, the three of us. And so there was all of our children. So there was maybe, what, 9, 10 children?
Yeah,
I don't know. It felt like 500 kids and 25 husbands and wives, for to be honest. But it didn't matter, because just the three of us were kind of, we grouped together.
Yeah, and it was quite eye-watering, wasn't it? We just talked about the eye-watering reality, really, mm-hmm. of things, attempts that we'd made to manage situations where, you know, we hadn't read Amber's book. At the time,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've laughed so hard in all my life.
Great panacea for everything.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But sometimes,
sorry, what did you say, Al? You hadn't what?
I hadn't laughed so much because I think mainly because of your husband's story about. Anyway, I'll not tell that story. That's
tell you off camera, Amber.
I think Amber's met. My husband, actually. Oh, if not, she spoke to
I've
him.
Seen all sorts of people at Adoption UK conferences, so I think I met her.
Yes, yeah, you did, yeah.
We're descending into madness, but it was a long, fun night. Amber, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, you're so
I really
welcome.
Appreciate it. And it is a bit of trial of fire, because you don't know what you're going to get. So well done, and hopefully we won't be too cruel.
No, you're very friendly, and it was all.
It's the last time I read a book, anyway, and tweet about it.
Yeah, that'll teach you.
Yeah.
That will teach you, won't it?
Teacher's pet.
No, we do appreciate coming on, Amber.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Brilliant.
And Elaine, thank you for being our guest host. And now that we've popped your podcast cherry.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh my goodness. I don't even know what to say to that, Scott.
I feel violated.
Well, let's put it this way. We might be filling your calendar up with a few more podcasts at some point over
your
the
phone's going to be
months.
Off for the next month.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's all right. We have ways. We have ways of getting in contact with her, so we're all right on that score. But Elaine, thank you for coming on and being a guest host, and for being so colourful about Amber's book as well, because I think that people need to, you know, they need to consider it if they're looking
credit
for
where credit's due.
Yeah,
fabulous. Pop it on your Christmas list.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're going to say goodbye. So as always, thank you for coming on, and Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.
Bye.
Don't go.
Right, I don't want to be funny, Amber, but why didn't you get us to do the intro for it instead of Sally Donovan?
Yeah, what's that all about?
Well, Sally's this kind of charismatic, you know, engaging.
Oh, good grief.
All
the things not, Al.
I didn't make that comparison, Elaine. For 1 minute, I didn't make that comparison. Can I know the honest answer?
No, not really.
She said yes.
She was cheap.